Welcome to the 11th installment of the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, Part 2 Palooza. Today we pick up where Jeremy Ebersole and I left off in early April, talking about neon signage, as well as the Society for Commercial Archaeology, of which Jeremy is a board member, both as primary sources. It was through this podcast that I was invited to do my first ever virtual podcast karaoke with the SCA's annual conference back in June. The conversations that resulted from that event will be aired during Season 3, which begins about 1 month from now. But for the time being, here's the second half of I Am a Neon Light. It's interesting that the most remarkable time for neon signage was just before the Second World War, as the 1930s are normally, perhaps lazily, seen as a time of economic despair. But for all the soup lines and migrant farmers, there were also another aspect of American landscape that was doing all right during the Great Depression. Times were obviously not great, but there were still significant pockets, not only of socioeconomically, but geographically as well, that were not as hard hit by the financial fallout as others. Neon have that technological trouble that's used so often in media, like movies and TV shows, where like one letter's burnt out a little bit and, you know, can sometimes throw off exactly what it does. It have that problem, but you were mentioning that one from LA that was, it stayed lit for 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, neon, like anything, needs to be maintained. You know, obviously this one in LA, I think, had the benefit of being inside and enclosed, and so it wasn't exposed to any kinds of elements. So the thing that, you know, causes those letters to flicker or go off, you know, it's a bird flies into it or gets at the neon or something. Birds find their ways into the housing of signs, you know, if they're not maintained and can do damage. I mean, luckily, you know, those, it's often quick fixes in the electrodes or the kind of the electrical components, and you don't have to obviously scrap the whole sign. You know, worst case scenario, you have a broken piece of it, you have to replace that piece. But yeah, so there is that element. Everybody, I think, has seen the neon sign with only half of it lit, right, or one or two letters not lit. The good news is those are easy fixes and don't require you, like LED, to scrap the whole thing and buy all new. But yeah, and that's that element. The technical part of it is not as much my expertise, but I know that, yeah, you can get in there and usually fix those issues. And oftentimes, initially, you know, a lot of these signs, you know, were sold, you know, with service contracts, you know, so you wouldn't see it as much because you buy your sign from this company. Maybe that company even continues to own the sign. But even if you're buying it, you're signing a contract for those folks to come out every month or every year and do maintenance on the sign. And you still see that sometimes in some places, but not as much as you do.
Because working with it would be beyond what most like diner owners would be willing to do, right? Like, or able to do, like actually maintaining it is a little bit more advanced than just a regular plastic sign with light bulb inside.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it does. Yeah. And again, I'm certainly not an expert on the technical side. So there may be some of that work, you know, people, and a lot of, I mean, you see a lot of older signs and, you know, sign companies, neon repair professionals will get in and see all of the things that the diner owner tried to do over the years. And, you know, like lots of things, if you're fixing your house yourself, and you can probably band-aid it for a little while, mm-hmm. but yeah, eventually a professional's hand will be helpful.
So, you know, I'm kind of bouncing around my primary source form that I do with that. And a lot of these questions are being answered as we go. But that's the way it always goes, and that's fine with me. One question I had, you know, because you mentioned about the cities as being sort of like the origin place, because in cities, mm-hmm. where people were walking or using, you know, short route transportation, it was, you didn't need the gigantic sign, first of all. But would you say by the time that neon finds its way out of the cities after World War II, was it almost as a way,
that whoever is using them was like communicating to, you know, visitors. It's almost like, here is the city's reach. It's like the city is reaching out beyond mm-hmm. its bare, you know, its borders. It's, and, you know, you get a kind of a taste of the city, even if it's just, you know, just the sign itself is, you know, reminiscent of the city. You know, 'cause I think we've all seen the neon light in rural areas. You're driving along mm-hmm. late at night, usually like a back road. You're hungry, or you're looking for, you know, somewhere to stay, like a motel, and there it is. You know, you might not hear it, but you can hear it in your head, the buzzing sound, right. You know, in the distance. You're like, oh yeah, neon.
Yeah.
In that moment, even if it's just for that moment, it's like, here is the urban America, kind of like a tendril, you know, it's like a, you know, reaching out and placed in this, you know, farm town or whatever, just to, you know, be like, I don't know. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm kind yeah. of getting weird.
Yeah, with no, this,
but like, I get that sense. It's almost like that was, even if it was not on purpose, it was just kind of like what it tends to be. It's like we associate with cities, tall buildings, lots of traffic, and neon. And then
mm-hmm. yeah.
neon is the only part of that that can really reach out and not mm-hmm. disrupt the mm-hmm. other environments as much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, absolutely. It is a sign of civilization. As you're driving when it's out kind of outside of the cities. And I think a lot of the folks who would have been putting these up, you know, in those early days of kind of suburban sprawl and car culture, you know, would not have wanted, I think, explicitly to say we're like the city, because the cities were at the time, unfortunately, seen as more seedy and, yeah. and were entering into a time of economic decline, especially in the 60s and 70s. So they would have, I think, shied away from saying this is the city, but certainly meant to evoke, I think, and even if it's not meant to evoke, I think does evoke the sense of that you have arrived somewhere that has
yeah.
the comforts of home and civilization. If there's electricity, as you said, there's going to be water. You don't need the sign to say water here. You know, you're going to have water. You're going to have a bed or something. If you have that shining light that says this is a place to stop that is safe.
Right. It's almost like they're like, we don't want the following things from the city, but we want neon. Like that's like right. the one, you know, we'll take that. Like we'll take that and yeah. some of the food yeah. and, you know, maybe some of the music and stuff like that. If you make a movie, we'll watch it and we'll put it in the one theater that has neon, you know, it yeah. says the name of the theater in neon lights. But yeah, other than that, yeah. you know, cause, and that's like, I think about those old theaters too. Like, you know, and you know, they are all over the country, you know, those, and they have every single regions had their own theaters, and they always had neon, like mm-hmm. that was like their mm-hmm. their look. And a lot of them probably showed up in the 30s and just hung on through the years, so it wasn't like it was a 50s or 60s decision, you know, to light them up with mm-hmm. neon. But it's like, and you know, movies are the ultimate, you know, they're made in cities, you know, LA, and just kind of exported to the rest of the country. And so like everywhere they're being shown is like a, you know, here's our own little, you know, it's almost like Los Angeles embassy is in, you know, it's like, here's our, the ambassadors from Hollywood are here, and here's their building. You can tell because it's a neon one, just like every building in LA, you know, we can assume.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. It certainly does it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It evokes that, yeah, that Hollywood image again, because Hollywood is growing up at this same time. And so the physical, the place of Hollywood, you know, is used a lot of Art Deco architecture, you know, the golden age of cinema in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, is growing up at the same time as neon. And so the actual place of Hollywood, you know, had a lot of neon. Grew up at the same time as theaters. And so theaters are embracing this technology. And then when that's exported to the rest of the country and the rest mm-hmm. of the world, that industry, you know, the image of the Hollywood industry is also embracing the technology of the time, which was Neon. And so, yeah, I did, like, where I live in, I'm in Brattleboro, Vermont now. We have, maybe one other sign other than the theater. But our movie theater here proudly has Neon, and it's places where you don't see Neon, you will still see it, in the motels, maybe a restaurant, and almost definitely the theater. Yeah.
There's a diner on your way out of town in Brattleboro that I've never actually stopped in, but I drive past all the time. 'Cause whenever I go to see family in New York, we always cut through Brattleboro, Bennington route.
That's the Chelsea Royal.
Yeah, that is the best looking diner. Is it good? Because it has neon. I know that. Like the
it sign is. It is. Yeah, neon. It's for sale right now.
Oh,
actually, I'm hope it is still operating. But to my knowledge, also it closed for the season. But still a going concern. But is for sale. So if somebody wants to be a diner owner, it is fabulous. They have a great ice cream there. Yes, it's a fabulous diner.
and uses the neon effectively.
Yes.
And to me, that's kind of like the judgment nowadays of, you know, like the check boxes of somewhere I want to go to. You know, it's like, is it a diner?
Me too.
Like, because I mentioned in my diner podcast, I'm like, I'll choose a diner over anything any day. Like, give me a diner versus pretty much every other kind of restaurant. I'm like, I'm going diner. And so it's like, diner, does it have neon? Check. You know, does it have, you know, coffee smell as soon as you open the door? Check. You know, then, you know, if it doesn't have neon, then I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'll, you know, try it, but that definitely helps me a lot with deciding what I want to do with it, whether or not to check it out. So
to your point, that's prescriptive. I mean, that's, I know if I go into a place that has a neon sign that it's my kind of place because they have chosen to have neon. So like, it works. The advertising is doing what it's supposed to.
It might do the opposite for somebody else. You know, I'm doing, you know, like some high society person, like, oh, never. My family and I just finished planning we're not fully planned out, but we bought our flight to go. We're going to go to Los Angeles. I've never been to LA before, and I can't wait to check out all of that Art Deco, all of that early 20th century, you know, pre-World War II architecture, and just like the layout of the place is so modern. You know, I can't wait to go see it. Have you been to Los Angeles before?
I have. Yeah, I was fortunate to have been a handful of times, and it really is. I mean, more, I don't know if I can say confidently that there's more neon currently in Los Angeles than anywhere else. But there is an awful lot of neon. And certainly at one time, there was more neon in Los Angeles than anywhere else. The Museum of Neon Art is certainly a must go to, and it's in Glendale, actually a suburb in the LA, not officially Los Angeles City, but one of the many other cities that are in the LA.
It's kind of the general LA.
But it's a fantastic museum. I mean, started in the 70s, the oldest of the six or so neon museums or sign museums that exist currently, but started originally with as fine artists using neon, and it was the fine artists really that started to bring neon back in the 70s. But it's a fabulous museum, and they do their neon cruise on a bus and travel around the city looking at neon signs. But yeah, there's a ton left, and a big piece of that has been there was an effort a number of years ago to restore a lot of the neon signs, especially rooftop signs in Los Angeles. So there are some of these signs had been just like taken down during the war, the Second World War. It costs a lot of money to haul a giant rooftop sign off. So people just turned them off or like set them down on the roof, and they sat there for 60 years until this, large effort what was undertaken to restore a lot of these signs using some city money and some really great advocates in Los Angeles. So you see, a lot of neon, and it's a place that has embraced that as part of the culture.
And again, had a lot. I hate to say it, like the skyline of LA, like I wouldn't be able to differentiate. Like if you show me LA from a distance, like the LA Law beginning sequence or something, you know, I would have a hard time differentiating LA from a lot of other Western cities or just cities in general, American cities, because I don't know the building structure. You know, you'd have to kind of zoom in a little bit more to show me, oh, there's the Capitol Records building. Like I recognize that one, but it's the neon that really makes it like that's Los Angeles. Or I would say that Las Vegas probably rivals LA as far as most neon in its history. And it's funny because both those places really owe the Hoover Dam or the Boulder Dam a lot to their existence, you know, because, you know, they like harnessing the Colorado River to make for hydroelectricity for the entire Southwest and, you know, making water available for it as well. And then when all the guys were done working, they'd take their pay. And, you know, I think it's funny that like the legislature of Nevada, passed legalized gambling the day after, or like within a week after the companies got the contract to build the Hoover Dam, they legalized gambling like the next day because they're like, well, all these guys are going to be coming up, you know, to they're single guys mostly, or they're away from their families. They're going to make all this money and they got to spend it somewhere. So they go up to Las Vegas and start, you know, spending it on gambling and women and all that. And then it's like LA is benefiting from all of that work to, you know, cause it really has no business being a huge city unless it was for the taming of the river and making it.
Yeah. So, it's a desert. They needed water and to make that place grow.
And so then the neon is just like the lasting evidence for both those cities. Be like, yep, this is when they showed up. Like this is when they came about.
So. Yeah, yeah, and they and to their credit, I mean, there are a lot of obviously new buildings in Los Angeles, but I think they've generally done a preservation. People think, oh, historic preservation. This is the, you know, the bastion of the East Coast where we have really old things. But there's amazing preservation work happening in California and Los Angeles, and you know for. Signage as well. I mean, places like, that are associated with neon signs, like New York, Las Vegas, you know, Times Square. Still, there is neon in those places, and there's great preservation work happening in those places. And Las Vegas has the Neon Museum and has some great programs for preserving neon signs. But you know, Times Square, there's maybe no neon. I mean, very little, if any. It's all giant LED screens and similar with Las Vegas. So that image of neon, the signs are still there, but they've been supplanted by the large LED picture screens. And certainly that's the case in Los Angeles as well. But you see a lot of old coffee shops and diners and apartment complexes with their names written in neon and such around.
And it's LA. Too bad because LED, it is dazzling to look at. It's pretty cool what they can do with it. You know, making these gigantic screens of, you know, images and stuff. And it's so modern. It's so, you know, cutting edge and everything. But it's just something so special and about neon. Like it brings you back to that spot where you should be. And I think that's where I want to take a minute and just talk about the SCA again, because I think what you guys do, it's also very telling about, you know, so 1976, is that when it was formed?
77.
77, okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that entire decade of the 70s was, it was almost people were desperately seeking nostalgia. You know, they were just so, like the current events of the 70s, which so many of them were just products of, you know, post-World War II stuff, you know, just the dreariness of it, It just caught up with the country, you know, by the 70s. By the mid-70s, the country was, and like, by our bicentennial. So I don't think that's, you know, mm-hmm, the year after mm-hmm. the bicentennial, you know, is when it is formed. But instead of focusing on colonial history, which the previous year had done so much of, holding on to that early 20th century style of architecture and lighting and signage and stuff like that, and pointing to that and saying this is valuable too, says so much about the 70s that people were, like I said, almost desperate to go back in time. I think about all the movies and TV shows. I mean, there was a TV show that used a lot of neon in its opening called Happy Days, you know, that actually was just called Happy Days. Like, it's like,
right.
You have no idea other than what's going, you know, this show is going to remind you of 20 years ago when we had Happy Days. We don't have Happy Days anymore, but
right.
You know, in American Graffiti, which basically inspired Happy Days, you know, the iconic image of America, you know, they, and that's my favorite movie of all time, by the way, is American Graffiti. When the logo comes up at the opening sequence, it's in neon, right? You have the American Graffiti. Mm-hmm. And it's like that whole, you know, I could go on. The 70s are just so full of nostalgia. So it's not strange to me that a society such as this one was formed then. You know, that it was like, mm-hmm. that was the era where people were really becoming aware, not necessarily of 200 years ago in American history, but just even 50 years ago in American history, and how it's still part of the past and still part of heritage. Mm-hmm. So, have you said with the SCA, what is sort of like your marker as far as what is historic versus what is vintage? Is there like a year span that you use before you can kind of say the difference?
Yeah. I mean, with SCA, we're pretty equal opportunity. So, I mean, we talk about, you know, the 20th century commercial roadside, is what we tend to look at. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you'll see in the publications, you know, we'll be from the mid-century period. You know, we're also still, I mean, now we're getting more into malls. You know, the 80s, it's always the architecture, the buildings, the culture of, you know, of roughly 40 to 60 years ago that is kind of the most in danger, because it's not appreciated, but then we start to get nostalgic about it. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I absolutely hated malls, this, you know, bastion of consumerism and capitalist greed. And now I love them. It's like they're even though I didn't have good memories in malls as a child, I look back at them and it seems so, so fascinating, and what's become of them and how it's changed. So there's always this, you know, like reaction, against that then becomes nostalgia, and then leads into something different. So certainly it was the same, you know, in the 70s, we're looking back on the 50s and in that time period. But yeah, so generally with SCA, it's really roadside culture of the 20th century, but because it is often roadside culture, it's often, you know, of the 20th century. But that said, you know, we have a lot of members who are really interested in ghost signs, like hand painted signs on the sides of buildings that predate, obviously neon. And so that's, you know, an element of commercial archaeology, architecture as well. And so some of those are, you know, from the 19th century.
Yeah. Oh, give me one of those with a, you know, give me a ghost sign on a brick building with a neon sign from like the 40s on that same building, and I'm in heaven. It's like, I just want to build a model railroad town right now. You know, I remember being on the train. I was on the train between Syracuse and Albany years ago, and we were, I forget what Rust Belt city we were driving through or taking the train through, but I looked out and it was like, am I looking into, you know, a Norman Rockwell painting? Like, this is like, you know, this nice little snow on the roof, and saw plenty of those ghost signs and plenty of the, you know, old neon, and then, you know, 20th century, you know, later 20th century stuff. It's just, it's, I can see the appeal of all of it. You know, it's funny because there's a guy I follow on Instagram as well, who does his site is called Recycled Architecture. And he posts pictures of, you know, stores that or restaurants that are clearly used to be something else. Like back when they took the time to make Pizza Hut very clearly Pizza Hut with the big, you know, hat roof thing, or even like a department store that was clearly designed to be now is being used for something else. And on the surface of it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. But then when you think about it more, you're like, wow, you know, those, like, are we beyond a time now where we're individualizing? Like, it wasn't that long ago that they were individualizing the look of their stores. And I took a picture for them of a place over in Sanford, Maine, which is now a Ocean State job lot. For people listening outside of New England, that's a discount, like, closeout store. And
despite the name.
Right. I always thought, like for the longest time, I thought you'd go get a job there. Like, I thought it was like a place
very
to,
strange name to me.
Yeah. And then it shared its space with a cinema pub called Smitty's. And that is a, and they're in an old Walmart. And it was, it's like clearly a Walmart. You could almost just like, you know, the bricks and the, everything was just 100% Walmart. But it was just so like, I'm like, yeah, that wasn't that long ago that it was a Walmart and now it's something totally different.
Yeah. So that's commercial archaeology, right? And that is exactly it. How do these places change? How are they reused? What does the use tell us about society?
How many circuit cities?
Yes, I know. I did a column for our SCA Road Notes, which is our quarterly newsletter, for about a little over a year, on exactly this. Had readers send in photos of used to be a dot, dot, dot. So we had Pizza Hut is one of the most famous. I mean, it used to be a bank, used to be a gas station, these types of things. Yeah, and it's fascinating. We have it here in Brattleboro, right on one of our main circles. There's an urgent care center that is very clearly used to be a Pizza Hut on the other side of
the circle.
Yeah. There's a Hojo's that's now was a Hojo's restaurant, Howard Johnson's restaurant, that is now a pizza place. But like you said, I mean, you can tell an old Arby's or an old KFC because of the shape. And now the McBox that McDonald's is using is the same as the Taco Bell box, is the same as the Burger King box. And
it's one of the greatest shames of that, like early 2000s was when they started just redesigning perfectly good McDonald's. We're starting to get that. And I'm like, what happened to the roof? You know, that little brown colored roof that, you know, sloped a little bit to the side, you know?
Yeah. We've become obsessed with gray.
And Wendy's had that nice, like, boxes around the side with the, it was just, you know, you could spot them from, you know, a mile away and be like, that's a Wendy's, that's a Burger King, that's a, you know, and they just said, nope, we're all just going to look the same now. They went for sleek and went for, and the trouble with that kind of architecture is it doesn't last long. It doesn't look good for,
a very long time. It's straight. I mean, the interesting thing now is that signage, I mean, some companies are starting to re-embrace this nostalgia. Like Burger King is still building very generic buildings, but they got rid of their kind of flashy logo with the flying burger and went back to something very similar to the 60s, 70s logo and in kind of their advertising and their brand. Pizza Hut, there was at one time talking about getting rid of all of their sit-down restaurants, has re-embrace them, and now you have these Pizza Hut classics that are branded specifically to look like that era that I grew up with in the 80s.
With all the wonderful features of, you know, the I was just talking Pizza Hut recently on one of my short episodes with a gentleman, and like every single one of them had the same pictures of Italy in between the tables. I always love those. Trying to guess what the story was in those ones. But Jeremy, thank you so much for joining the EPS podcast. And thank you were mentioning before the Society for Commercial Archaeology can be found at sca-roadside.org, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And also on Instagram and Facebook primarily. So lots of great coverage there. We try to post pretty regularly about what's happening in the roadside world. Please check it out.
Instagram is the place for that kind of stuff for sure. I've fallen in mm-hmm. love with Instagram. I used to be a Facebook person and now it's all Instagram because I just love the images with the camera. Mm-hmm. It's just like, mm-hmm. I know that sounds kind of dull, but like, oh, I like pictures, but you know, the way that it's communicated so well, you know, keeps with the spirit of what we were talking about for the last hour of
neon absolutely.
And catching one's eye. So, thanks for joining the EPS podcast where everything, including neon and the Society for Commercial Archaeology, are primary sources. We'll talk to you next time.